बंदे रूप सनातन रघु जग श्री जीव गोपाल को।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we spent considerable time in this first theme of rarity of bhakti. You all know Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his preachings to Rupa Goswami Pad, similar things he said. In this world there are inanimate objects and there are animate objects. So animate objects are superior. And amongst animate objects also there is chara and achara, moving and non-moving. Trees are non-moving. Other living beings are moving. And then he says, amongst those which are moving, he said, there are birds, there are bees. That Padma Purana verse says, you know, Jalaja Anava Lakshani, Stavara Lakshami Vimshati, Kramayo Rudra Samkyakaha, Pakshi Nam Dasha Lakshani. Like that, there is a verse which talks about how many species of birds are there, animals are there, aquatics are there, reptiles are there, everything. Mahaprabhu also explained to Rupa Goswami. And then he told him that amongst them, the human body is very rare. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila also categorizes all this, but his categorization is slightly different. What he says there are some living beings which put food in the bottom and they get nourishment at the top. Which are those? Trees. Then he says there are some living beings which put food here and they have a horizontal body and then they get nourishment and the evacuation takes place at the other end. Animals. Then he says, then there are creatures which put food at the top and evacuate at the bottom. That is human beings, isn't it? So like that, that is the way he explains. In Kapila section, if you see, different type of creatures, you know, which he explains. So, after explaining all the creatures, Lord Kapila also says that human beings are the best. Because only in human body, the civilization starts. Prabhupada says, there is one dialogue of Prabhupada. Animal plus dharma makes a human being, he says. That means human being minus dharma makes him an animal, isn't it? So, even in a slum you will find a gopuram. Of some small temple they will be worshipping. Some understanding of God is there always. So from there he begins to Rupa Goswami's teachings. He says, amongst humans, he says, and different types of categories, he says, about how there are irreligious people and religious people. Amongst the religious, their karmakandis are 99%, he says. 99% of the humans mostly go to God for some material benefits. And that 1%, he says, there are jnanis, yogis and bhaktas. The balance 1% of humans. Which means, if you take 7 billion population of this universe, not universe, our earth, the globe, so if you take 7 billion population, what is 1% of that? 1% of 7 billion, how much it comes to? 70? 70 million? Huh? 70 million. So 70 million means 70 lakhs. Huh? Oh, sorry. 70 million it comes to. So 10 million is, 1 million is 10 lakhs. 70 million is? 7 crores, okay. So, 7 crore people are religious people out of 7 billion. Correct, no? So, in India itself, we have 120 crore people. And the 7 crore may be in India, maybe mostly 4 or 5 crores will be in India only, I think. You know, balance will be other places also. So, 7 crore, how many? 7 crore, correct, no? But out of the 7 crore, he says there are karmis, jnanis, yogis also. In that also, he says, jnanis, yogis and bhaktas, 1% population of the so in that 1% population also He says, most of them are jnanis. He says, jnanis and yogis, he says. Therefore, amongst them, Muktanapi Siddhanam Narayana Parayana. He says, Koti Shapi Mahamune, one out of crore. So therefore, although we all are sitting here, we may not be pure devotees, one thing we should know, that our inclination to accept Krishna and to want to serve Krishna and to want to be in the company of devotees, that itself makes devotees very special. What to speak of, you know, those who have become purified. So one should deeply consider these teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami. So rarity of a Vaishnava Bhakta, that is explained there. Another verse you might have heard, this famous one. It says, Brahmananam sahasrebyo satrayaji vishishyate. That is the verse. Amongst the Brahmanas, there are some who can perform Vedic sacrifices. They are considered very rare. And then he's saying, satrayaji sahasrebyo sarva vedanta paragaha. Those who have studied Vedanta, amongst those yajna performers, are very rare. Because some people chant Vedic mantras, but they are not realized in Vedanta. And then he's saying, sarva vedanta vidkotya vishnu bhakto vishishyate. He says, amongst the Vedantic reciters, Brahmanas, Vishnu Bhakta is very rare, he says. So Prahlad Maharaj says, a non-devotee Brahmana is inferior to a dog-eating Vaishnava. Dog-eater who becomes a Vaishnava. Shapacha Vaishnava. Shapacha becomes Vaishnava, he is superior to a non-devotee Brahmana, he says. So finally he says, amongst the Vaishnava Bhaktas, the Ekanta Bhakta are... Shuddha Bhakta is one in thousands, he says. That is also very rare. So, in this way, our Parikshit is asking the question, but Vritrasura became such a devotee. See, he is saying here, this, we finished up to which verse number? Five. Read the sixth one.
Vritrasura was situated in the blazing fire of battle and was an infamous sinful demon, always engaged in giving troubles and anxiety to others. How could such a demon become so greatly Krishna conscious?
Correct, no? So it's a very meaningful question. Next, translation, seventh one.
My dear Lord, Sukadeva Goswami, although Vritrasura was a sinful demon, he showed the prowess of a most exalted Kshatriya and satisfied Lord Indra in battle. How could such a demon be a great devotee of Lord Krishna? These contradictions have caused me great doubt, and they made me eager to hear of this from you.
Yeah. See, when Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami went to Ramkeli, there they saw Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu surrounded by millions of people, all raising the arms and chanting and dancing to the holy name. So Rupa Sanatana were amazed by that sight, because they were very intelligent scholars and learned personalities, and Vaishnavas also, Rupa Sanatana. So Rupa Sanatan's amazement was what? How is this, that this one personality is making millions of people, you know, surrender to the Lord, raising the arms and chanting the holy name, falling on the ground and dancing, rolling. So therefore at once Rupa Sanatan fell at the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and told that famous verse, Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prima Pradayate. That read that. So the very amazement of Rupa Sanatan shows that how they are also very advanced in spiritual life. Because they, to appreciate a bhakta also requires great punya on the part of those who are appreciating also. It's like we have heard the statement, one has to be saintly to appreciate those who are saintly. Like one boy was asking, Prabhuji, why people are attracted to this Maharaja so much? When some Maharaja comes, people are coming, running, and they running behind him, begging for mercy and praying to him and taking his maha maha and, you know, trying to get a glimpse of association. I am not feeling any urge at all. I said, that's because we have covered over so much. You know, we don't feel any urge. We think, you know, what is so great about it? I don't depend on anyone. To think like that itself is a disease. It's a diseased state. So somebody sees Hare Krishna devotees in the street chanting and dancing, and they think these are fools. Look at them, I am going in a very costly car, I am a rich man, I am a big man, and things like that. That goes to show how he himself is a fool, considering the devotees to be fools. On the other hand, in one, it was I think in the yatra we heard from that Mataji, who is Anand Shanti Prabhu's wife, that Mataji? Mandakini Mataji was telling. When they went to Mayapur, all the foreign devotees, when they were doing Harinam Sankirtan, all the Navadvipasis, ladies and men, all of them, they all were folding the palms and stood on the side of the street so that they can pass. And after they passed, they rolled on the ground and took the dust on their heads. Where they performed? Harinam Sankirtan. So Mataji had observed that. She turned behind and saw, the same road which we walked through, they are rolling on the ground and taking the dust on their heads. How much they have reverence for the chanters of the holy name. So the holy name is sacred, the chanters of the holy name is sacred, and the dust of those who are chanters of the holy name, that is also very sacred. So in this way, if somebody can appreciate, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in one place, the Lord Sri Vigraha is very merciful because Krishna manifests himself in a spiritual form visible to material eyes. So he says it's very rare. Similarly, the body of a devotee which one can see with one's eyes is also extremely rare, he says. It is actually because in that body of the devotee is manifesting many devotional symptoms of folding the palms, bowing down on the ground, raising the arms, chanting and dancing, and sitting and listening to the katha of the Lord, and delighting in the Lord's pastimes, and eating only prasad, associating only with devotees, and avoiding contaminations of the world. So these kinds of behaviors are not possible to be exhibited by common living entities. Like you go in the street and see how many people you find like this. Therefore, as practicing devotees, we have to know the rarity of not only pure devotees, but also practicing devotees also. By considering these points in our mind very seriously, you know, our reverence and respect and appreciation and longing for association of even average devotees will increase by this. How many of you feel over the years we become somewhat sensitized or very dull in recognizing the glory of devotees? Correct, no? So therefore we have to study all this. We should not be taken very lightly. Now we may say, Navadvipasis, you know, they are used to offering obeisances, Prabhu. You know, whoever comes, they will roll on the ground. We don't know what is inside their mind. See how much our mind speculates. How much our mind is so cunning and so offensive. First of all, this mind is atheistic mind. It doesn't feel any feelings for good association. And it is also criticizing those who have feelings. Correct? No? Like once I was telling, hey, look at this old lady in front of Jagannath cart in Jagannath Puri. One lady had tears streaming from her eyes. And she was offering lamb to Jagannath. So I showed one devotee, hey, see these Odisha Vasis, you know? They have natural devotion to Jagannath. As soon as she saw Jagannath's darshan, Jagannath, you know, climbed up to on the rath. So she was offering a lamp. She has brought a lamp in her pocket and she was offering. So one devotee was telling, Prabhuji, I sometimes feel maybe she is Sahajayika or Bhavuk. We don't know. So Mahaprabhu never said like that about the old Orison lady. He never said that. Only we are saying. You see? So that is whose problem? Mahaprabhu's problem or our problem? Actually, we can always give a benefit of doubt. So, although Prabhupada wanted to save us from Sahajayism, we should also be able to see those who are deeply appreciative of devotees' association. So, that is the first part we discussed, the rarity of bhakti. So, after saying all these things, Parikshit is asking, how such a demon like Vritrasura could exhibit? So, yesterday, did you hear attentively one very interesting point our Sankarshita Adhikari Prabhu made? He said in Prabhupada, I didn't yesterday in the youth class, I think, he made one point. Prabhupada one day was addressing all the Western devotees alone. So he said, so all of you, welcome back to India, Prabhupada said. And then Prabhupada said, you all have been Indian Brahmanas in your previous lives. Now you have occupied your bodies in the West to assist me to fulfill the mission of Lord Chaitanya. Like that he was telling. So Prabhupada once said that. He was there in that class, he said. So, therefore you will find somebody may be born in America or any other place, and they may have a Western body, but they exhibit all Brahminical qualities. Like this Vaisheshika Prabhu, His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu came to meet my father the day before my father passed away, you know. So as soon as he came, he was reciting that Swasti Vachan from Mantra Pushpam, you know. Ayatanaman Bhavati Yomam Ayatanam. You know, he was quoting that whole thing. Huh? Then he quoted this Narsimha Stotram from the fifth canto. Randaya, Randaya, Nashaya, Nashaya, there is a verse, no? He had memorized it completely. So he was telling all that. My father was amazed. Huh? And he came and he heard the recitation. So he may be born in America, but he is reciting the Vedic mantras, he is chanting Hare Krishna, he is ecstatically situated in spiritual knowledge. Only the foolish Indian brahmanas will criticize that, hey, these people have Western bodies. Huh? That's a very superficial outlook. So therefore, wherever the bhakti resides in anyone's heart in a very potent and powerful way, we have to salute it and we have to bow down to it and we should long for that association, you see. Yeah, give the mic to him.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. I have a question that when we see such great souls, we develop some appreciation for them, for their Krishna consciousness and their dealings and everything. So, and we develop some desire to, like you said, maha maha, and you know, other things, or trying to serve them, cook for them. But there is other side to it of sentimental, being correct. Sentimental also.
Yeah,
so how to be not sentimental?
Actually, if you want to, if you are afraid that you may be mistaken, if you can commit mistake on the sentimental side, because this is sentimental side, this is offensive side. Out of the two, like one example my special master said, when some other sannyasi came in, not ISKCON sannyasi, some other sannyasi came into New Vrindavan, he entered the temple hall and devotees offered obeisances to him. And he became very angry and he chastised the devotees. Hey, how can you offer obeisances in front of the deities? So all the devotees got frightened, they all ran away. After that, so Maharaj was telling, this sannyasi was following the law, one rule that you should not offer obeisances. On the other hand, he was breaking another rule of chastising in front of the deities. And then Maharaj was making one concluding point in this pastime. He said, even if a devotee by mistake offers obeisances to somebody in front of the deity also, the Lord is not going to punish the devotee. Lord may say that he's a foolish devotee. He doesn't know. He's offering obeisances to so many people in front of me. Maybe he's an uninformed fellow. Maybe he needs to learn etiquettes. Like that Lord will think. On the other hand, if somebody commits offenses to somebody, then Lord will become angry. So what two emotions do you evoke in the Lord's heart? By being on the sentimental side, by being on the offensive side. Correct, no? So at the same time, one should not just be sentimental in just all the time clicking photo of the Guruji, all the time, taking the garland and saving it and all the time running for Mahamaha. And then such people sometimes in their real life, when you see they are still breaking regulative principles, they are watching movies, they are still watching video games, you know, they are hardly serious in spiritual life. So we sometimes get disgusted when we see such people, that they are sentimental in terms of accumulating this special Mahaprasad and all that, but they don't have sincerity and seriousness. Remain the same. So what I would do is appreciate their sentiments and leave their wrong behaviors. And in the same manner, appreciate the strictness in offensive devotee, like Damodar Pandit. He was strict even with Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu accepted his strictness part and followed the rule, what Damodar Pandit told him. But he also chastised him for his offensive part of being a brahmachari instructing a sannyasi. Correct, no? So from both these behaviors, we have something to take. Correct, no? Like that we can take. All right?
But how we should do? For myself only?
Yeah. Not actually, to become sentimental? See, nothing can be done artificially. Correct, no? Like one devotee was taking maha-maha of one sannyasi and distributing to many devotees. And one fellow was very hesitant to accept. He said, Prabhuji, I don't eat other's food and all. I eat mine only. He was telling. So if somebody is faithless, can you give him maha-maha? Therefore, it is not a very good idea to go around distributing. in the name of distributing mercy. You take yourself and keep quiet. Especially Mahamahandal. Similarly, some people bring Maha water. You know, Babaji, this is the water which washed the foot of that Maharaj. Now, 6 months ago, I only was present in that program. And he is giving and giving devotees. Some devotees are thinking, Babaji, 6 months ago, pata nahi, isko pikar mar jaunga main. Some people bring some water. You agree what I am saying? You know, so should you go around distributing water, keeping it for 2 to 3 years? No need to do that. You take little water and go on with your business. In the name of giving mercy, don't give very old you know, prasad and things like that. You know. Yeah. Somebody said, Prabhu, I went to London, I have brought some special prasad for you. It was like a square thing, so hard, like it's like a wooden, like this. Prabhuji, what prasad is this? When did you get it? So that was 2-3 months ago. But don't worry, Prabhu, they have put preservatives, it will not get spoiled. You know, but it is so many preservatives that you can't bite only. So no need to keep such things for a very long time. You just accept it. Therefore, even distributing to others is not a very good idea. Unless people, you have to only, how will you know who has faith and who doesn't have faith? You are supposed to distribute only to those who will be grateful for receiving it. Correct, no? Therefore, actually, if we have the faith in those items, we are fortunate. The Tina Mahabal, are there, no? What is it? Vaishnavera Padaduli? Bhakta Padatuli, Bhakta Padajal, Bhakta Bhukta Avashesha, Tina Mahabal. Yeah. So, actually, therefore, if somebody has faith, I don't have faith, then I should admire the devotee who has faith. See, he has so much faith, like Kalidas had so much faith. So we can admire the devotee instead of labeling them as sentimental. Correct, no? There are people who have faith, and that faith has actually elevated them. There are many, many people like that. So, rarity of bhakti we discussed, first point. Let's go to the next one. What happens between verse number 8 to 17? What is happening? Go ahead, read it quickly. Go on reading it. 8th verse. Shri Suta Goswami said, go ahead.
One who has...
No. 8th verse. After hearing Maharaj Parikshit's very intelligent question, Shrudaya Goswami, the most powerful sage, began answering his disciple with great affection. Shri Shrudaya Goswami said, O King! I shall speak to you the same history I have heard from the mouths of Vyasadeva, Narada and Devala. Oh, that means 3 times he has heard this. Huh? Please listen with attention. O King Parikshit, in the province of Shurasena, there was a king named Chitraketu who ruled the entire earth. During his reign, the earth produced all necessities for life. And then Prabhupada says in the purport, if you see below, after Ishavasyam, leave 5-6 lines later, when there is a good ruler, that source produces the necessities of life abundantly. However, when there is not such a good ruler, there will be scarcity. And then Prabhupada quotes the Kama Varsha Parjanya, Maharaj Yudhishthira's rule and everything. We have no control over the earth's productiveness, for it is naturally under the full control of the Supreme Lord. By His order, the Lord can make the earth produce sufficiently or insufficiently. But if a pious king rules the earth, there will naturally be regular rainfall and sufficient produce for to provide for all men, like the Prabhupada is saying. So he was a good king, so earth produced all the necessities for the citizens. This Chitraketu had 10 million wives, but although he was capable of producing children, he did not receive a child from any of them. By chance, all the wives were barren. Now somebody may have a question, how can a king have so many wives? 10 million wives. 10 million means how many? 1 crore. That means... But India, what is India's population? 120 crore. Can't a king have 1 crore of the population? That means not even 1% of Indian population. Because in the Vedic times, the kings had lands which they have not even seen sometimes. They would send a minister to conquer a land. It will be in king's name, but they might not have seen it also. Similarly, a king might have married many women with the desire of even your father's father. In their generation, you will see some people having 2-3 wives, you must have heard also. But why they have one wife, if she is unable to produce a child, then they may have second, third. That's one reason Prabhupada says. Another reason he says is in the Vedic times, many became brahmacharis, sannyasis and went towards you know, north, spiritual world, spiritual life. So the men's population was less and women's population was more. So more women needed shelter. And then the men were allowed to give shelter to more women. That's one reason Prabhupada says. Another thing he says, for a man to marry more than one wife is extremely dangerous because he has to treat both the wives equally and be able to satisfy them. Because man cannot do that in Kali Yuga, he is not allowed to marry more than one. Prabhupada says that. Actually, the man has to be so spiritually advanced that the wives will not quarrel. They will treat him like a guru. And the wives will see that he is a very detached man, and he should be equal to all the wives exactly as we treat all living entities. And he should not, that is the problem Chitraketu is going to face now. He is treating one wife with affection, another wife with, you know, neglect. And you will see the result, what happens by that. So therefore, when Pandavas had five husbands, had one wife, which is a strange phenomenon, which is not commonly done, because Draupadi is born of fire, she is not a woman. Similarly, our Premlocha, you know, an Apsara was given to the 10 Prachetas, no? What's her name, Premlocha only? Mrisha? Marisha, yeah. So Brahma came and delivered her, isn't it? So these kind of marriages are extraordinary. And they are all like sanctioned by the Supreme Person in a bill of Brahma or the Supreme God and things like that. In fact, the marriage of Pandavas with Draupadi was sanctioned by Vyasadev. After that, it was done. So Narada tells them that in this situation there can be problems, quarrel, and he gives some prescription for them. In the same manner, in Chitraketu, he was explaining once, one of the devotees, Saini devotees, 10 million wives means many, many wives. Like that he said, it may not be exactly this number. Like that also he said. Like sometimes in the CC you find Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cried, you know, ocean of tears, it says. So His Holiness Jayadev Swami Maharaj is telling, immediately we picture in our mind, a ocean of tears came from His eyes, then all the Vaishnavas will be floating in that ocean and they may not have any boat. They will get drowned in that ocean, what will happen? So we may imagine too many things. But he said ocean of tears means lot of tears. Not that exactly ocean came there or something. Like that he said. So in English there is a simile, metaphor, what do you call it? What do you call this one? It's not hyperbole. It is actually got what do you call it? Illustration. First of all, I don't know what it is, so I can't know whether what you're saying is correct. I don't know the exact one. Okay, whatever it is, but you understand the meaning. Like Mahaprabhu told Srivas, even if Lakshmi goes door to door begging, you will never be without wealth, he said. So immediately picture us in your mind, Lakshmi ji is going, please give me. Now, do you think Lakshmi will beg? It's called Atishayokti in Sanskrit. Atishayokti means sometimes you tell a very exaggerated thing. Yeah, exaggeration, yeah. Alliteration, correct. I think it's called alliteration, I think. Yeah. Like somebody says, Prabhu, this boy gives such an amazing lecture. He gives more systematic than Balagovind Prabhu also, if somebody says like that. And he is more scientific than Chaitanya Charan Prabhu also. And he sings better than Amal Kirtan Prabhu also, if somebody says. Why we say like that? We know these are the outstanding people in certain fields. Correct, no? Why purposefully we compare this fellow with some people? Why we want to tell the other person, please understand he is not an ordinary fellow. Correct, no? Correct, no? It's called Atishayokti, we say. So in this way, sometimes you will find like that. As we proceed in 12th one. So in this way he goes on. He was not able to have a son despite having all of them, although he was born of a high family, complete education and all these things. And the Prabhupada says in the middle of the purport, Putra Hinam Griham Shunyam, if a family man has no son, his home is no better than a desert. So the king was certainly most unhappy. One important thing, although Chanakya says Putra Hinam Griham Shunyam, your husband wife should have some children at home to raise, But by will of providence, if they don't have a child, they should have Krishna as their child and be happy in their life. Because sometimes husband, wife, they don't get children for a long time in their life. So Prabhupada used to tell some of his disciples that you accept Krishna as your child and you worship. But if somebody has a son, daughter, they are blessed. And then he says, the 13th verse, he's talking about the queens. They all had beautiful faces, attractive eyes. But their opulences and hundreds and thousands of queens and vast lands, all these things did not make him happy, only because of this one reason, he says. Now another theme is coming up now. You can see. Second theme. Read it.
Control of mind, most essential for happiness.
Yeah. Tasekada tu bhavanam angira bhagavan rishihi lokan anucharan yetan upagacchat yadrichaya. Yeah, read the translation.
Once upon a time, when the powerful sage named Angira was traveling all over the universe without engagement, by his sweet will, he came to palace of King Chitraketu.
Yeah, see, Prabhupada has explained it in many places in Bhagavatam. Therefore, he has no purport here. Because in other places he has explained. See, yadrichaya means by chance or by, you know, like when he was moving from place to place, suddenly he says here. And see, don't think he is a jobless fellow having no engagement. Actually, many brahmacharis are also thought of like that by the common people. People ask, you don't have any job at all? Which company you work for? We say, you don't work for any company, we just travel and preach. People are shocked sometimes. Then what do you do for your bread and butter? Then we say, everything Lord arranges. Just as a father arranges for a son, some Lord arranges for us. We do Lord's work. So, even Kumaras moving about, that is also spoken in a similar way. Navayogendras arriving in Nimi Maharaja's Yajna, there also similar thing you will find. You know, Narada Muni arriving at Prachna Parishad's palace, Yadrichaya, you will see like that. See, this Yadrichaya, Prabhupada has explained, the devotees of the Lord are moved by Lord's will. So Lord actually makes them come to a certain place, and Lord understands, just Chitraketu right now requires purification. And Lord understands. And he moves the legs of the saintly people to go there. So that is one meaning of Yadrichaya explained elsewhere. In one of the purports you will read it. Prabhupada says that. Another meaning is, Yadrichaya means, the saintly people all the time keep moving from one street to another street, trying to find out where are the customers to take them back home, back to Godhead. Is there any living entity interested in the Lord? How they will go, it's very difficult to predict. See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was supposed to go to Vrindavan, but where he went? No, that is another pastime. He went to Ramkeli. Correct, no? But why he went to Ramkeli? Because there were two special personalities whom he wanted to preach and include in his movement, Rup Sanatan. Correct, no? So devotees are ready to go anywhere. Therefore, our programs are quite flexible. Correct, no? Like Krishnanpur's program is most flexible. Like, you know, somewhere in one small, in one home they had called him for some Janmashtami, some program. He asked how many people will come. Some 40 people are coming. He said, okay, I'm coming. And then suddenly another temple called him, where about 1,000 people would be attending. Then he called the previous house and said, you all join there. That program I'm going. First I was thinking of coming to your place. They said, Prabhuji, we thought your lotus feet will come to our home. He said, first I will finish my Janmashtami, then I will visit your home. So his programs are quite flexible. Therefore, whenever you fix Krishnanpur, you have to keep a substitute also. You know? Ready. So they are ready to move anywhere freely. But how do they calculate? Saintly people always calculate, where can I give maximum mercy? So like Prabhupada was lying in the bed in Vrindavan in his last days, and some devotees, they were whispering, because there was an opportunity from London had come to speak in a TV. You know, TV show, only 5 minutes only. One devotee said, we were thinking of inviting Prabhupada to London to speak in the TV, London TV. So Prabhupada, and the other devotee said, shh, don't tell Prabhupada. If you tell Prabhupada, he will you want to get up and go to London and all. Now doctors have told not to exert. And Prabhupada said, come here, what is going on? And then Prabhupada started calculating, he said, London TV, okay, how many minutes? 5 minutes. Okay, how many people will watch what I am going to speak? Then they said, several lakhs of people will watch it. I heard Prabhupada did that show. He did that show, he didn't leave it. So, devotees are always thinking of reaching the mercy to as many people as possible. They will go anywhere. You tell them to go to Andaman Nicobar, they will go also. When they have to preach. Prabhupada went to Russia, and Prabhupada said in Russia there was no rice available. There were no vegetables available. Shyamasundara Prabhu had to go 20 kilometers to get some little bit of rice and vegetables. Prabhupada says that. Then you may ask Prabhupada, then who told you to go there? You know that country is like that. Where do you go? But the tendency to show mercy in the pure Vaishnavas is so deep-rooted, they will take all possible difficulties and troubles to reach out to people. Just like Prabhupada was living in the house of Sally Agarwal, keeping the potato in the same fridge where meat was kept. Correct, no? So in this way, Angira Muni, with the desire to show his mercy, is traveling all over the universe. And then it's mentioned, by his sweet will, see the word is mentioned, by his sweet will, he came to the palace of King Chitraketu. He was thinking, how can I show my mercy to this king so that he can become a devotee of the Lord? Because kings are generally absorbed in their worldly activities, and if he's a little pious king, he can be turned to devotional service. So he's coming there. Read further, 15th verse.
Chitraketu immediately stood up from his throne and offered him worship. He offered drinking water and eatables, and in this way performed his duty as a host to a great guest. When the Rishi was seated very comfortably, the king, restraining his mind and senses, sat on the ground at the side of the Rishi's feet.
See, one word is mentioned here, restraining his mind and senses. When we are serving great souls, we have to be cautious. We cannot be we cannot speak grossly or querulously or carelessly or foolishly, because it may lead to offenses. Like later on, you know, Chitraketu, when he laughed at Shiva, he got into problem. Correct, no? Similarly, Indra just missed to offer obeisances to his guru, who vanished from there, and he lost all his opulence. One small, it's a momentary neglect, big price he had to pay. So while dealing with sages, one should be very cautious and not be careless. Actually, we have to act in a way to please them. Because if we don't act in a way to please them, we may earn their displeasure. And when they are displeased, then the Lord is displeased. So one should deal with rishis and munis like dealing with fire. So therefore, he is mentioning here restraining his mind and senses. Once His Holiness Ramapad Maharaj was staying in one temple, and he was given an assistant to take care. And this assistant would go to Maharaj's room and I said, bat at the door. Maharaj would open. Maharaj, anything else you want? Maharaj said, see, you have given everything. You have given prasad, you have given me water bottle, you have given me internet connection, you have given me everything. Now I am doing some writing work. I am busy. And I don't need anything more. You just leave your mobile number to me. And if I want, I will call you, Maharaj said. Then he took his mobile and kept it. And after half an hour again, he went and at the door. And Maharaj said, door is open, push the door. But his boy was not pushing. Again Maharaj had to get up and go and open the door. What do you want? Maharaj, would you like to have some juice? It's 11 o'clock now. Maharaj said, I never asked you. So Maharaj said, do not come unless I call you. Correct, no? So we should not be over-enthusiastic also in the name of serving, because we will unnecessarily disturb great souls. Correct, no? At the same time, we should not be inattentive also in serving. If we are so careless that we never go there only. And the Maharaj has to search for you. Can you give me some food and water, so that I can survive here? No, Maharaj, I am very careful. I will not disturb you. So we have to know what is too much disturbance and what is inattentiveness. We have to know the difference. Therefore, we have to restrain our mind and senses. And while speaking to great souls, you can't talk casually. I am not only telling about Maharajas, even while dealing with your senior devotees also, when you are talking, You can't be jovial with them the way you can be jovial with an equal friend. You can't be casual, because sometimes we are casual with everybody. But casual behavior can lead to casualty. It has happened. Because like Draupadi had a habit of laughing every time. When she laughed, when Duryodhana was putting his feet in that glass which was appearing like water, that one laughter entered deeply into the core of Duryodhana's heart. And he created so much trouble later on for the Pandavas. So careless and coarse behavior should be avoided. So we have to restrain our mind and senses when we are dealing. So therefore, you will find that some people have a natural reverence while dealing with people. Like I saw one devotee in Mayapur recently when I had gone. This devotee is in Bosari project. He was an alcoholic anonymous. You know his name? One devotee before. He was a teacher. He is a teacher who teaches on mind management and all that. So he was there. So he was giving Aarti lamp. So he's giving the Aarti lamp was so reverential that anybody would take the Aarti lamp reverentially. On the other hand, some people take the Aarti lamp and they just run around like, people are afraid he will put it on my face or something. All the spiritual items have to be given, like, you know, giving Charanamrita to somebody. You have seen this Prabhu who comes here for training the pujaris. What is his name? Chitran Gav. He is one person we have to learn from. How to reverentially do things. You observed that? How he does Prabhupada Guru Puja, you watch him. You will see that. So, dealing with the Lord, dealing with devotees, that we should be sober and reverential, respectful, attentive, careful. That's the point mentioned here. Therefore, he restrained his mind and senses and he sat on the ground. Although he was a king, he didn't consider that he is a king. He sat on the ground. That shows his humility. And he sat on the side of the Rishi's feet. I read the next one.
O King Parikshit, when Chitraketu bent low in his humility, was seated at the lotus feet of the great sage, the sage congratulated him for his humility and hospitality. The sage addressed him in the following words.
See, the whole idea of exhibiting humility and hospitality to great souls is to attract their compassion. Correct, no? Why we want to please spiritual master? Because Yasya Prasadar, Bhagavat Prasadar. When he is pleased, Krishna will be pleased. When Krishna is pleased, Krishna can easily solve all our problems. Small, big, everything. Therefore, intelligent people, just like for example, a greedy businessman is always very polite and humble with the customers, and you know why. Correct, no? So he has his business. He knows that I want to capture this client so that I will have a big crores of rupees of exchange with him. Similarly, as devotees are religious people, we should be intelligent on how should I, with what disposition should I deal with other Vaishnavas and everything so that they will favorably look towards me, they will mercifully glance on me, they will compassionately bless me. And when they do so, then my spiritual life will become very easy. My heart will be flooded with realizations and the books will become easily understandable. Chanting of the holy name will become very delicious and tasty. And Lord's hand in every walk of creation will be visible to me. So this is real intelligence. Therefore, see, as soon as he behaved humbly, see the result. Immediately the sage congratulated him for his humility and hospitality, because the sage understood he is a king, but he is not proud. He is very humble. He is bending low. He is sitting down and he is seeking mercy. Oh, so Angira immediately became favorably disposed. See, in this way, by attracting favorable disposition of the sages and saintly people, you know, we will be in their merciful glance always. And they will protect us. And they will purify us. They will elevate us. Read the next one, 17. Angira uvacha apite namayam swasti prakriti nam tathatmanah. Yata prakritir guptah puman raja cha saptabihi Yeah.
The great sage Angira said, "My dear king, I hope that your body and mind and your royal associates and paraphernalia are well. When the seven properties of material nature, the total material energy, the ego and the five objects of sense gratification are in proper order, the living entity within the material elements is happy. Without these seven elements, one cannot exist. Similarly, a king is always protected by seven elements: his instructor, Swami or Guru, his ministers, his kingdom, his fort, his treasury, his royal order and his friends."
So we will discuss it after reading the purport. In the purport, Sridhar Swami in his Bhagavatam commentary is quoting this. Read the translation. A king is not alone.
A king is not alone. He first has his spiritual master, the supreme guide. Then comes his ministers, his kingdom, his fortifications, his treasury, his system of law and order, and his friends or allies. If these seven are properly maintained, the king is happy.
So these seven conditions are there. And this is not only true for a king, for anyone, like you, we all have our spiritual master. And we have our people with whom we work with very closely. And with whom we jointly produce results. Your right hand, left hand people who work with you, they are like the ministers. And the kingdom are like the people who are under you. If you are a counselor, you have counselees. If you are an authority, you have younger and younger and younger subordinates, isn't it? So we have our praja. And similarly, his fortification means a protection mechanism. His treasury means, without money, Prabhupada says, one who has money in his pocket is intelligent, he says, because without money you cannot do anything in this world. Prabhupada said, ISKCON is my body. And then the money of ISKCON is like his blood, he said, in the body. And just like the blood circulates all over the body and keeps the body active, in ISKCON also Prabhupada said you have to bring a lot of money and spend a lot of money in Lord's service. So the king should have treasury also, and it should not be looted by anyone. And he has a system of law and order. Actually, law and order keeps the society peaceful. Similarly, the discipline should be instituted in such a way that the living entities will accept the discipline and align with it to be peaceful, and those who don't align get some punishment, seeing which the other living entities are cautious. Correct, no? And the punishment should be moderate, and it should be acceptable by all the jivas, so they can remain cautious. Correct, no? So the law and order keeps. Because the living entities come in this world with enjoying propensity, so they are likely to do wrong things. So they have to be protected with law and order. Similarly, and then his friends are allies. So if he keeps a distance from the allies, so that he doesn't trouble them, they don't trouble him. Like if tiger is in one extreme end of the forest and deer is in another extreme, there is no problem. Deer is in his community, tiger is in his community. But whenever he has to deal with, but the tiger doesn't remain there, it comes here. Correct, no? Because it has to get. So then there is a, then similarly the people, kings don't remain in their own kingdoms peacefully. Some kings always attack. Therefore, he has to have friends also. He has to have other friendly kingdoms. Like in those days, the kings would give their sons in marriage to some other kingdom king whose daughter he will marry, and that kingdom will get connected to this. Correct, no? Like that, like you see Dasharha or Anda, like that the Andaka, Dasharha, and the list of dynasties given connected to Krishna, you will hear that. Similarly, Pandavas and the Kaurava dynasty had a lot of connections all over the world because of giving the family members in marriage. So, in this way, the kingdom expands, and then the greater the support, stronger the situation of the king. Like if you see Yudhishthira Maharaj, he had expanded practically all over the world. All kings heard the name of Yudhishthira and saluted immediately. They were ready to pay tribute. There was only one fellow who refused to align with Yudhishthira. Who was that? Jarasandha. And he was finished after that. So, there was practically no thorn for him. So in this way, then the king is peaceful, king is happy. So seven conditions are given here. So these seven conditions can be seen in our lives also. Like the alignment with the spiritual master, supreme guide, and the people whom we work with, and the protective mechanisms which make sure that we are not putting ourselves in a vulnerable situation. Rather, we should put ourselves in a safe situation. Similarly, our treasury should be enough so that there is no anxiety for running the daily chores. There should be a system of law and order which we all agree to abide by. If you don't agree to abide by, then there will be... Imagine there is no traffic rule at all in Pune. All the cars, buses can go in any direction. Will there be peace? And that happens in some of the roads in Pune. You have seen that? Especially in that Sadhwaswani Chowk. I have seen anybody goes in any direction without any control sometimes. Correct, no? It leads to chaos. And then our friends give us encouragement, appreciation, support, comradeship. We get from those. Because everybody will have a small circle of friends. Similarly, the king also has his friendly kingdoms and friendly kings, as well as the ministers whom he considers as friends. So in this way, he's saying, if the seven are properly maintained, then the king is happy, he's telling. And then below, four or five lines from the bottom, he's saying, when we inquire, read it.
When we inquire from a friend whether everything is well, we are concerned not only with his personal self, but also with his family, his source of income, and his assistants or servants. All of them must be well, and then a person can be happy.
Yeah. See, for example, you go to somebody's family, you ask him, how are you fine? Imagine if his wife has a sickness, she's admitted in hospital, will husband be peaceful? Or you ask Mataji, Mataji, how is your family? Are you happy? And the husband doesn't have a job, or husband lost the job, will she be happy? Because in a family, they're all closely connected, husband, wife, children. Imagine if a child is getting 20th rank or 25th rank in the class, will parents be happy? And they can't be happy. They are worried, how is this fellow going to survive in the world? His study is so poor or something like that. Similarly, the husband's parents also, and the wife's parents also. Correct, no? If there is enough money at home to run the family, now and in for some time to come, then they are peaceful. And although sometimes we talk about the bad effects of accumulating too much money, still many people fear that, Prabhuji, too much money we don't want, but at least we need to run the family. Correct, no? So lack of money, therefore Prabhupada is saying in the last line here, when you talk about when is everything happy, because you are not independent, you are connected. Similarly, in a temple also, even if a brahmachari may say that I am renounced, I am happy, but how will you be happy? Because the other people are connected to you. Your immediate associates, one of them is suffering from some disease, or one of them is very vulnerable and becoming weak in Krishna consciousness, is going down. Like in Chopari temple, one saffron devotee changed to white. So one of his friends cried out loudly, because he is going to lose his friend from the ashram. Of course, that devotee is not blooping. He is going to get married and settled elsewhere. But he lost his very good friend with whom he can confide. Correct, no? So, therefore, our well-being is not only in our own well-being. Our well-being means our friends and our cooperation with the subordinates. If you don't get cooperation from subordinates, that will cause tension to your head. Then you will think, hey, he doesn't cooperate, then I will also not cooperate. Then when you don't cooperate, who gets trouble? Then subordinate, they get trouble. Which means we have to get cooperation from our superiors, from our equals, and from our subordinates. And we should have enough money to run the show. All those things he is saying. You know, assistants, servants. Imagine two people are going to a youth center to preach. And all the time, they are all the time sniffing like this. He is sniffing, the senior is sniffing at another fellow, and this fellow is sniffing at him. Do you think they can peacefully preach? It's very difficult, isn't it? Sometimes people go on an ego trip, we call it, no? So therefore he's asking, are you peaceful? Are you peaceful means are seven things in order. That's the meaning. Yeah. Atmanam prakriti shvaddha. निधाय श्रेय आपनयात राज्ञा तथा प्रकृतयो नरदेवाहितादयः.
ओ किंग, ओ लॉर्ड ऑफ ह्यूमैनिटी, व्हेन अ किंग डायरेक्टली डिपेंड्स अपॉन हिज एसोसिएट्स एंड फॉलोज देयर इंस्ट्रक्शंस, ही इज हैप्पी. Similarly, when his associates offer their gifts and activities to the king and follow his orders, they are also happy.
Yeah. See, here he says the king, if he is very proud and egomaniac and he thinks, I know everything, I can do everything on my own and I don't need anybody's help. So he considers himself independent. Such a king is hated by his subordinates, the praja and the ministers and everybody else. And on the other hand, if the king is simply a puppet dependent on his ministers and on the praja and on the sages, and he doesn't think at his own feet, he cannot give vision, he cannot think loudly, he cannot decide, he cannot make decisions, such a king also is considered good for nothing. Correct, no? Therefore here a combination is said. The king should be, whenever he makes any decisions, he consults people below and he shares his heart. What do you think about it? And they all give their opinions and everything. So, king depends on their suggestions. Just like Lord Rama is depending on the monkeys for deciding whether Vibhishan should be taken in or not. But finally, did Rama follow what they said? No, Rama had his decision also. What was his decision? He should be accepted. Although many of the monkeys were very afraid to accept him. So, Rama, then they agreed to cooperate with his vision. Correct, no? That's what he's telling. Similarly, when his associates offer their gifts and activities, which means if a minister gets any gift, he should go and give it to the king. My dear king, somebody gave me this gold ring for me. They have given to me, but I thought that the best thing should be given to the king, so I'm giving it to you. And the king may see the ring and say, beautiful. Okay, now you can keep it back. I have already many rings. You keep it back. Like the ring gives, then the minister is very happy. Then next time also he will keep showing everything. Because now he got back one thing, correct, no? Imagine the king says, oh, beautiful ring, thank you. And he wears it. Then all ministers will know that anything you go and show this fellow, he will take it up from you. He will not give anything back. So then they may hide some things. They may put something in the pocket and give some things only, correct, no? So in this way, both ways the relationship should be like that, he's telling. The subordinate should give the gifts to the king. And also, they should offer all the activities to the king. What is the meaning of that? They don't do any independent activity. They only do activity which will ultimately be contributing to the king's plans. And also they follow his orders. Just like in a home, say if a man is leading the home, wife is submissive and children are grateful, and the husband is protective, then such a family purpose is a very happy family. Correct, no? But you will find in this world there will always be difference in opinion between husband and wife, or between one brahmachari and another brahmachari in the temple also, between authority subordinate, even sometimes between counselor counselee also. You know, one counselee is asking, Prabhuji, my counselor is saying one thing which I don't like, so what can I do? Can I change my counselor? So another devotee asked him, how many times you changed counselor? Prabhuji, this is the sixth counselor. In 4 years, I have six counselors. That means, you know, because you are unable to give up your desire, you are changing counselor, you see. Like this. So, or similarly, authority has one plan, but he has to hear the idea of the subordinates first. After which, if authority says, your ideas were wonderful, Prabhu, but I felt this would be better, we can do this, then subordinate will agree that, okay, at least he listened to me. They will have the satisfaction. But if authority says, no, I don't want to listen to yours, I know you will be giving some, very primitive idea. You know, I already know what is best, you just follow me. Aank band karke follow karo bas. Then subordinate will say, you never heard me at all. Then they don't feel like following. So this kind of incompatibility between authority subordinate or counselor counselee or brahmachari or husband wife family, these things come. But the principles of Bhagavatam give us a clue on what is ideal. For example, if a wife has a wonderful idea and the husband is coming and saying, I am thinking that we can put our child in a Marathi medium school. Husband says, it'll be very nice because my Marathi is my Matrubhasha and I like it very much. Let our child also study in Marathi. Wife should say, wonderful idea, brilliant plan. Thank you, sir. Which school you prefer? And then he says, these 3-4 schools, we can think one of them. And then the next day morning, husband is asking the wife, of course, I told my idea, but you never told yours. Wife says, no, why should I say mine? If you are happy, I'm happy. And the husband is insisting, no, I want to hear. And if she says, I thought it'll be better if she studies in an English medium school, it'll be very nice. We have very nice BMS, very good teachers. Tomorrow he may go abroad. It may not be enough to know only Marathi. Let him study in English medium school, along with some Marathi, I thought like that. But I am not attached to my opinion. If you want to put him in Marathi school, you can put. So what do you think husband will do? Correct. He'll put him in. So why? First of all, she didn't give opinion, but later on when asked, she gave opinion. So then it's a very happy family. Correct, no? But unfortunately, this is only in theory in many places. Generally, people break both the tooth, each other's tooth, and both of them are banded. And then they agree with whoever is more stronger breaker. People agree with that person. Tooth breaker. Anyway, at least we can learn the correct etiquettes. Correct? No, a king should be willing to listen to his subordinates. And subordinates should be faithful followers of the king and follow his orders. See, even in Vedic times, it was not easy. Like, Yudhishthira Maharaj is telling, 12 years we will go to forest. Is Bhima happy? Is Draupadi happy? They're not happy. Which means even in Vedic times, it's not that everything was goody-goody, cozy-cozy. It was not like that. There are problems, you know, because we have mental contamination of wanting to push our opinion. So therefore, alignment means both parties have to be bendable. They can't be brittle. If both are brittle, there will be a terrible problem. Apidaraha prajamatya shrenyota mantrinaha. Sorry. Britya shrenyota mantrinaha. Paura jana pada bhupa. Atmaja vashavartinaha.
O king, are your wives, citizens, secretaries, and servants, and the merchant who sells spices and oil under your control? Are you also in full control of ministers, the inhabitants of your place, your provincial governors, your sons and your other dependents?
Yeah. Proper purport?
The master or king and his subordinate should be interdependent. Through cooperation, both of them can be happy.
So, generally what happens, like in India for example, the husbands were spiritually very inspired by connecting with the gurus. And the gurus were very stable in their spiritual life. So they could inspire thousands of millions of men. When men are very inspired, they have returned home and they have heard Ramayana, Mahabharata and Bhagavatam and such kinds of messages. So husbands behaved in a very mature way. And the wife, naturally the wife would see the husband's spiritual maturity and develop deep affection and respect and service attitude towards the husband, seeing that the children also developed very good qualities and values. So the families were happy families all over India. You will see that. And gradually what happened, when materialism increased, the husbands, they became cut off from the gurus, and many gurus became bogus people. They are not studying Shastra properly. So they themselves don't know what guidance to be given. They became materialistic, money-minded. And then some of them fell down. So the husband naturally have no guidance. They are like a boat in the middle of Atlantic with no anchor, you see. So they got lost. And the husband started mistreating the wives. Some husbands even beat up the wives. Some husbands take the dowry of the wife and not go for a job and just eat at home. Prabhupada says, don't think in the material world you will be treated like a son-in-law. Like the Prabhupada says, because son-in-laws were given a lot of respect before. If you go to your in-laws' house, they'll give special type of food to eat and special facilities for you. So Prabhupada says, one man married 64 times, Prabhupada says. Actually, each time he married and left one wife, The newly married wife thought that he'll be responsible, but this fellow was a useless fellow, irresponsible fellow. So the husbands were enjoying the dowry of the wife, asking her to bring more and more money. Then what do you think wives can respect such a husband? They couldn't respect. They lost respect for such a husband. Besides that, if a husband is an exploitative husband, and some places, you know, somebody is trying to put fire to your wife, put kerosene on her, and you hear such things, because mother-in-law and why a husband, then she runs to her parents' home. Therefore, then women started going for job. Then they had to survive on their own legs. And in a community, in a society, to survive for a woman alone, especially if she's a young woman, you know, many, many eagle-like eyes are watching to exploit the woman. Instead of treating them like mothers, because in society there is no culture of treating all women as mother, unfortunately. So on one hand, if you go near husband, he is exploitative. If you go to office, there are so many people trying to exploit the woman. So it's a very precarious position, if you see. So everything went in disorder. See, why I am telling you this? Because of no proper mutual dependence between husband and wife. Similarly, in any situation of king and his praja, or a leader and subordinates, the relationship has to be one of mutual dependence. That's the point here is emphasizing. If mutual dependence is not there, both should actually be concerned about the other, rather than be concerned only about oneself. Like, you know, two devotees are going out of Pune. One senior devotee is very enthusiastic devotee, and the junior devotee is a growing devotee. And the junior devotee is always worried about sadhana and having brahmachari class and such kinds of things. But the senior devotee is already ecstatic. He is hearing, chanting, blissfully situated. And the junior devotee is telling him, Prabhu, you know, last 2 months we had no classes together. He said, what classes? I will hear my Guru Maharaj class. You hear class separately. I will hear some lecture, you hear. But this junior devotee is looking for some, what do you call it? Some together association. We should sit together and hear and do some discussion. Otherwise, I'm feeling dry. So if the senior devotee is very callous, you know the word callous? Callous means what? Insensitive. To junior devotee, what is likely to happen, can you say? Easily you can foresee, we can weather forecast, we can do, what will happen? He is saying he will lose respect, he is saying junior will lose respect. That's all will happen, any more can happen.
No cooperation.
He is saying he will go to some other project, he is saying. First thing is he will come running back to Pune. That's the first thing he will do. Prabhuji, my senior didn't take care of me, Prabhuji. I have been telling Prabhu, morning time he is telling me to go for follow-up. I am actually suffering so many internal problems and he is not caring for me. So was there mutual cooperation or no mutual cooperation? Mutual is not there. Subordinate is ready to cooperate, provided you are concerned about his needs. Therefore, you know this example we give, two dogs, and both their necks is tied with a rope. So this dog likes biscuits, and that dog likes bread, kept in the two corners of the hall. So what should the two dogs do? One should go. How one go? They both are together, tied. Ropes. Both go and pick up the biscuit, and both go and pick up the bread. Come together, sit and eat whatever you like. Correct, no? But sometimes what problem comes? This dog says, hey, I want biscuit. Okay, you go with the dog. Once he gets biscuit, sits there only. And he's eating. He's very happy. And this dog is starving. So this dog is looking at the bread. When will I get my bread? And that fellow is eating biscuit. Suddenly he snatches and he cuts his rope. He wants to cut his rope and run, but because he cannot cut, what happens? He runs to the bread in such a fast way, other dog is dragged along, you see. And this is how quarrel happens. Because we are not paying attention to mutual interest. So it's a very simple example, you see. That's why the Prabhupada is saying, the master or king and his subordinate should be interdependent. So one observation I made in my life, that as soon as the other devotee starts expressing some concern, I very carefully note down. Because now it's a small concern. Beep, something coming. Tomorrow? Beep. Beep. Like it will come. Before it comes, when the small amplitude only, you pay attention to that. That is called a sensitive devotee, correct? No? Yeah. What is the 20th one? We finished 20th one. 20th can read it, yeah. Yasyatmanu vashaschet syat. Sarve tad vashagayime. Lokasapala yachanti. Sarve balim atandritaha.
If the king's mind is fully controlled, all his family members and governmental officers are subordinate to him. His provincial governors present taxes on time, without resistance, and what to speak of lesser servants.
Yeah. See, in the previous translation, he talks about the merchants who sell spices and oil under your control. What is the meaning of that? See, every praja is supposed to pay 25% tax to the king. But some of them will try to cheat. They may pay just 5% to king and give 5% bribe to some minister. And then they will do away with the job in 10% only. Other 15% they will pocket it. So, but therefore he's asking, are the merchants under control? Are they, also are the ministers under control? They are not taking bribe and cheating you. And the ministers are not pulling your leg. Are the, sometimes the minister has a son and he want to make his son the king. In India, such things have happened sometimes. So he will kill the king and put his son Rajkumar in a prison and make his son the next king. You understand, no? Just like Dhritarashtra, he wanted to make who the king? Yeah. So what he did with the Pandavas, he wanted to burn them in Varanavat. So he wanted to kill his brother's sons so that they can't become rajas, and so he wanted to become, he wanted to make his son the king. Like that. Therefore, he's asking, are they under control? Your wives, are your wives happy with you, or they are running away with somebody? Are your citizens subordinate to you and paying the taxes and all properly? Our citizens are not forming a union and rebelling against you and dethroning you? Are the secretaries and servants, are they cooperating with your plan? It shouldn't happen that you say one thing and they do another thing, correct, no? Similarly, the merchants, are they paying taxes to you? And then the inhabitants of palace, like you see this, Indira Gandhi had some sick this thing, bodyguards. But one of the bodyguards only shot her, correct, no? Like that. But why he did? Because, you know, in those days, Bindran Wale, what is his name? Bindran Wale, he was a sick man. So Indira Gandhi had given him a lot of encouragement and position. But at one point of time, when Indira Wale went against her opinion, she practically removed him from the scene. And she tried to kind of bury him down so he cannot go up. And that fellow happened to be a Sikh. And similarly, Indira Gandhi's bodyguard man, he was also a Sikh. So the Sikh-Sikh connection, correct, no? Oh, one of our Sikhs, she has, you know, buried him, thrown him down from such a position, using her power as a Prime Minister of India. So some connection must have happened between the Sikhs and this fellow. So when she was going from one place to another, they shot her, correct, no? So therefore, even when Rajiv Gandhi went to Sri Lanka also, one fellow tried to hit with the gun when they were giving respect, soldiers. One of the soldiers hit him on the behind. Of course, he showed a reflex action of escaping, but later on he was killed by another live bomb, you see. But the idea is, somebody holding such positions, there will always be envious elements who may superficially show subordination. Recently, I happened to be in Delhi. I met Parampuja Gopalakrishna Maharaj there. I went to his room. I was there for an hour. Different things we were talking. Mohanra Prabhu also came and joined, we were talking. One interesting thing he said, Prabhu Gopakrishna Maharaj. So he was telling, all people who show respect to you are not exactly respecting you, he said. And that is the law of the world, he was telling. Everybody may show superficially respect, but doesn't mean that they are respectful to you. And also he said, although many people may praise you, they do it as a duty. Just like somebody gives Bhagavatam class, and he's getting out the Vyasasana and looking around. Now, is there anyone who will come and appreciate me or something, you know? And then no one is speaking anything. So he may go and ask, Prabhuji, what did you like in my class or something, you know? Then they may say out of duty something. Correct? No? But that doesn't mean they actually mean it. How many of you understand this point? It's clear, no? Yeah. So this point Maharaj is making. Maharaj said, so many people come to me and praise me so much. I know very well that they don't actually praise me. They don't actually respect me. He said that in this world, actually this he was telling in context of one particular devotee who came and he was living for some time, he got deviated. Mohan Prabhu, me, Maharaj, when we were talking, at that time Maharaj was telling. So I appreciated Maharaj's deep spiritual maturity. Correct, no? So therefore, because he is, and then he said, our actual affection and shelter can only come from Krishna. He said, while living in this world, some are genuine, some are not genuine. We do not know. But if one is taking shelter of Krishna and getting affection, then one can actually be guided in all kinds of situations in this world. Correct, no? Therefore, he is asking these questions. And then he is going to put a big bomb. He is going to tell one very important thing very soon. Yeah. Just now we read, no? 20th verse. If the king's mind is fully controlled, all his family members and governmental officers are subordinate to him. He says, his provincial governors present taxes on time without resistance. What to speak of lesser servants? My Lord, this is the highlight verse, 20th verse. So he says that in this world there are too many people whose cooperation you need. The seven categories are said. Now all those seven categories of people, can you chase after them? You cannot chase after them. But there is one easy root he is telling you. Just control your own mind, they all will become controlled. It's like mind is like a master switch. You control the mind and they will become controlled. So if I become sober, then all the seven items around me will be aligned in such a way that they will all be willing to cooperate with me. But if my head is like a matchstick on fire, and I am not controlled in mind, I try to run around and chase after people and demand subordination, that will not happen. So it's a very great lesson it is. Similarly, if you are moving about in this world and you are trying to become popular and gain respect from people, gain name, fame, glory, but you find that the living entities do not respect you so much, the living entities don't feel so much attracted to you like a magnet attracting iron, they are not attracted. There is one simple solution given in the Bhagavatam. You know what is it? Yasya prasanno bhagavan gunair maitriyadibhi tasmai namanti bhutani nimnamapa ivasvayam. This verse says in the fourth canto that when super soul tells the people to be attracted to you, then only they become attracted to you. If the super soul tells them to bow down to you, then only they bow down. So one brahmachari came to me and said, Prabhuji, that Maharaj gave a very simple class, but after the class so many people are surrounding him and asking so many questions. You know, I prepare very powerfully, technically, with so many powerful quotes and, you know, stories and illustrations and everything. And I give class, you know, some or other, nobody seems to be so attracted. Then I told him, because you have not pleased the Supreme Lord. I don't know, if you please the Supreme Lord, the jivas will be attracted to you like the iron filings attracted to magnet. Because who is in the heart of everybody? So if you please that person, who is in the heart of everybody, then that person actually makes all jivas get attracted to that person. Like it said, Shubani Prinanam Sarva Jagatam Anuraktata. This is coming in that nectar of devotion. A devotee who has crossed the Kleshagani stage and goes to Shubhada stage, there it is that Prinanam Sarva. He loves all jivas. He was all attracted to him. Jagatam anuraktata. The whole jagat feels attraction for him. And they respect him and they salute him. This is one reason you will find when great sannyasis, maharajas come, they, even if they speak very apparently simple talks or lectures, they may just make one point, they may speak just few minutes, but the jivas are attracted to them because their hearts are flooded with love and affection for the Supreme Lord. Lord is pleased with somebody. Therefore, when Dhruva returned back to his kingdom, everybody bowed down to him and showered flowers. Correct, no? And he achieved the kingdom, which is Dhruva Loka. So after I learnt this, my mind became completely peaceful. In my life personally, when I came to know that, oh, if I please the Supreme Lord, then all living entities actually their dealings towards us will change a lot, because the same Lord is in the heart of everybody. Correct, no? Therefore, in case the living entities are unhappy with us, we can know that the Lord is also unhappy with us. We can know. So we have to find out how, what am I supposed to do? Probably I have to modify my thinking, my speech, my behavior in such a way that the living entities unnecessarily will not be disturbed by my dealings. Correct, no? And then you align with the Supreme Lord and properly align with it and run your life. Then you will find the whole situations change. So these are great secrets given. So one secret I told you just now, that yasya prasanno bhagavan, when Lord is pleased with the devotee, what happens? Gunair, by our qualities and our friendly dealings with him, when Lord is pleased with us, tasmai namanti bhutani, all living entities bow down to that person, he says. Similarly, another secret he released here just now, in 20th verse, what he said? If a king's mind is fully controlled, all his family members and governmental officers are subordinate to him. So how many of you feel that when you see a person who is very stable and composed and controlled in mind and cheerful, you feel attraction for that person? Therefore they will obey. Correct, no? So such people are not too many in this world. Huh? Therefore, if you work on ourselves rather than running around and chasing after people with a stick, hey, you become subordinate, hey, you become subordinate. You know, it's very difficult to do also, and it's very painful. There are many husbands who are unhappy with their wife because they feel wife is not submissive enough. We have to tell them, actually, first you control your mind first. Correct, no? We haven't controlled our mind. It's a very great lesson. See, read the purport of 20.
Angira Rishi asked the king whether his mind was also under control. This is most essential for happiness.
Atmanah priyate natmam paratah svataye vava lakshaye labda kamam tvam chintaya shabalam mukham.
O King Chitraketu, I can observe that your mind is not pleased.
See? That means sages can see. They can easily understand. That means Angira Muni himself has controlled his mind and he is mature and he is able to be composed in his life and he is able to observe the king and help him. You see? Therefore, before we can help others, we have to help ourselves first. Yes?
You seem not to have achieved your desired goal. Is this because of you yourself? Or has it been caused by others? Your pale face reflects your deep anxiety.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you are putting your best, but others are not cooperating with you. You want to accomplish a certain goal, but others are not cooperating. So you will be sad. Like I was telling, you know, we used to distribute 50,000 Bhagavad Gitas before. Then we made 1 lakh. Then we made 1.5. Now instead of going beyond 1.5 and doubling it, you know, it had become a bit reduced, 1.2 or 1.3. So now I used to go to all the counselor groups and try to sort of, you know, motivate during Janmashtami and other times also to push as many books as possible. But sometimes you may be jumping up and down, but others may not cooperate with that vision. Correct, no? On the other hand, sometimes the problem may be ours also. That means, you know, we are not very organized in our, you know, way of distributing books, in our planning, in our handing over suggestions and ideas. Because many people are actually willing, if provided in the top management, people are able to, what do you call it, give it down in a very planned way. Just like in our voice preaching, things are so well set, people align with it, follow it, they get results. Similarly, we have to do for book distribution also. So therefore, he is telling here that sometimes our unhappiness is caused because of others' non-cooperation. Sometimes our unhappiness is caused because of we committing mistakes. So he's asking which one? Either of the two can make you pale-faced. And you have deep anxiety. Like that he's telling. Mind, this is not only true for a big temple with such a big project, but even in a home, your husband, wife, children, we can actually cause trouble to others and cause trouble to ourselves by our speech, by our behavior, by our dealings. we can welcome unhappiness in our life due to uncontrolled mind. How many of you agree? Correct? Like for example, we can take a small mole into a mountain, make it into a mountain. One small problem happens, we are unable to forgive or we are unable to forget, and we make a big human cry. And then the result is, I am unhappy, other members are unhappy, everybody. Therefore he is asking, evam vikalpito rajan vidusha muninam api saha vidusha muninapi saha prashraya vanato vyaha prajakamastato munim.
Shukdev Goswami said, O King Parikshit, although the great sage Angira knew everything, he inquired from King in this way. Thus King Chitraketu, desiring son, bent low in a great humility and spoke to the great sage as follows.
Purport.
Since the face is the index to the mind, a saintly person can study the condition of one's mind by seeing his face. When Angira Rishi remarked about the king's discolored face, King Chitraketu explained the cause of his anxiety as follows.
So, great sages can study the mind very easily. That is one reason why many people fear to ask questions. They send chits. Because sometimes I have seen many gurus and sannyasis and all, they don't answer the question, they answer the intent behind the question with which they ask. I remember in Bombay, once His Grace Gaurahari Prabhu, Gaurahari Prabhu is very fond of developing Varnashrama projects, you know. So he asked a question to Paramujaranath Maharaj, that Maharaj, you know, so he asked a question regarding people in city and why they are just stuck in the city, why don't they go to the village and become happy by leading Varnashrama project. He himself is doing a lot of initiatives. In fact, some of the IIT professors are now having cow in their house because of Gaurahari Prabhu's influence. Even in city they have cows and they are milking the cow, bathing the cow regularly. And he is also going to villages and inspiring the people to stay in villages. He is doing that. So when he asks this question, Maharaj will see who is asking the question. Okay, so this personality, he has more bent for Varnashrama. So therefore he may not like the people who are all the time in the city, you know, delighting in city life. Correct? So what Maharaj said? Maharaj said, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Gramya katha na kahibe. Gramya vartana shunibe. He didn't say city katha na kahibe. City vartana shunibe. Like that Mahaprabhu didn't say. That means even in a gram there is prajalpa. It is not that the gram is in mode of goodness, that everybody is always blissfully Krishna conscious. Even in fact, gram more prajalpa is possible because more time. Correct, no? Therefore, gramya katana kahibe, he was telling. And then Maharaj said, there are people in village who are playing cards, drinking liquor, you know, watching movies, you know, wasting their valuable human life. And there are people in the city going to ISKCON temple and cooking bhoga for the deities, making garlands, and there are many Matajis who do that, and Prabhuji also distribute books and everything. They are living in the middle of a horrible city, but they are dynamic. They are doing it. So it's not that people living in city are useless, bad people or something. On the other hand, Maharaj said that in village also, the atmosphere is conducive for spiritual life, but one has to take to spiritual life. If you don't take to it seriously, then the very same village life will make you lethargic, you will go to tamaguna. Adhar he was telling. So the idea is, Maharaja's answer, he gave in such a way that Gaurahari Prabhu's appreciation of people living in the city also, as devotees, will increase. Of course, Gaurahari Prabhu is a very intelligent devotee. So he gave him another perspective. Correct, no? Therefore, the person who answers questions should actually help the audience. Like imagine if he asks the question about this, Maharaj says, yes, city people are all simply like donkeys. They just work hard, and those who go to the villages, you know, and join Varnashrama projects and take care of cows, they are the best, if he says. Then somebody like God may go and say, see, Maharaj told, just see, correct, no? So therefore Maharaj gave a very balanced answer he gave. And Maharaj told five types of people. In that lecture he was telling, those people who are in city but live in village consciousness, simple living, high thinking. And there are people in village who live in city consciousness. Even in village they want to have posh car and everything, want to show off and everything like that. So like that Maharaj told different categories like that. Yes, Prabhu, is the mic to him? So he, the Guru answers the intent of the question, you see.
Ruchi, I happen to be there in that class. Yes. I wanted to add one more thing, Maharaj, with your permission.
Yeah.
So Maharaj told Gauravipu that in the village, some villagers may be like following all the natural lifestyle forms. Mm. Like they may be going in bullock cart.
Yes.
Bathing in the fresh flowing water.
Yeah, water.
But in that bullock cart, they may be doing prajalpa.
That is the time he told this.
And in the city, one may be going in the pollution, in the auto, honking. But he may be with the beadbag chanting Hare Krishna. So whether you prefer the atmosphere, natural atmosphere, doing prajalpa, or in the polluted environment, but chanting Hare Krishna.
Correct.
So it matter of consciousness, like yes. That Maharaj added one point.
Yeah,
right. I just remembered there.
Yeah, correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, and yes. Recently I was in the car in Kanpur with Maharaj and I was sitting behind. I said, Maharaj, how wonderful it will be in Brahmacharya Ashram and in Grihastha Ashram in Pune. All over there are study circles for Bhagavatam and devotees come together, pure devotees. They come together. I am thinking, Maharaj, I wanted to, you know, start one SWAN network. You know what is SWAN network? Spiritual Welfare Accountability and Nourishment Network. So I told Maharaj about this. Accountability means they will have sadhana card and everything, pakka. And nourishment means there will be regular camps like this kind of camp they will also have. And the group will not exceed single digit. Each group will be maximum 9 devotees. And when Maharaj heard, I spoke to him almost 10-15 minutes, I explained about this. In Pune also, Calcutta, Kanpur, everywhere. Maharaj, but it will be voluntary, whoever wants to join can join this. And from senior to youngest one, everybody in congregation also. Because sometimes the counselor groups, over a period of time, the counselor is unable to pay attention to counseling. Then I told him about accountability, certainly everything. And I asked, Maharaj said, oh, your idea is brilliant. I like it very much, he said. I said, oh, really like it, Maharaj? Yes, thank you. Then I am thinking of implementing it in Pune. I need your blessings, I said. And Maharaj looked behind and said, I especially like it because it is your idea. You understand? What is it? I especially like it because it is? What is the meaning of that? I had a big laughter after that. That means, Maharaj, that means you don't like it. No, no, no. I never told that. I like it. And then he said, let me explain to you, he said. And then the car was going. And then 5 minutes he was thinking. And then he saw one building, tall building, almost 20-storied building. It was a big, width also was very big. And in between there was a hole in that building, like this rectangular hole they had made. It is not two separate buildings. It's one building, they have made a rectangular. Maharaj was shocked. So he asked the devotee in the car, why they have made a hole in between? The building could have been just a straight building. And then the devotee said, Maharaj, this is a little modern style they have made. Modern style, many things they do. They put gopuram kind of thing in the top, so many things they do. Maharaj said, okay, that is your interpretation. I will tell you my interpretation. Maharaj said, and then he said, you see, when you build such a tall building, there will be wind force on the building. But when you make a rectangular hole, it allows the wind to pass. And thereby the building stability will be longer. It will not collapse very easily. Then he turned to me and said, so Radhesham Prabhu, for long-term sustainability, some breathing space is always favorable. And then Maharaj, I think better I abandon this idea, he said. Maharaj said, no. He said, these kind of nice systems, everything, as long as they are voluntary, people take it very happily. It's very wonderful. but they cannot be made compulsory. If it is voluntary, they take it and they benefit from it, like that he said. So, in this way you will find the Guru actually answers the intent of the question, not just the question itself. So, it's very beautiful. Where were we? 20? Okay, that theme is over, second theme is over. Control of mind, most essential for happiness. Therefore, we have to have a very good self-observation of our thought process and how am I speaking, how am I acting, what is the situation of my mind. Today morning also in Japataka we are selling now, Apuryamanam Achala Pratishtam. If our mind is calm, cool, collected, then it is more easy for us to function more efficiently and effectively. Otherwise, running around, running behind so many people in this world and chasing after them, expecting them to do the way things we want to do, it's very difficult. So, this section is very important section, which Angiramani spoke to Chitraketu. Seeing Chitraketu unhappy, understood, one of the seven items is in trouble. Chitraketu is suffering because of that. Understood. Since the face is the index of the mind, he could immediately read it. Chitraketu ruvacha Bhagavan kimna viditam tapojnana samadibihi yoginam dvasta papanam bahiranta sharirishu. Yeah, translation? This is 23. Mike is not here? Okay. King Chitraketu said, "O great Lord Angira, because of austerity, knowledge and transcendental samadhi, you are freed from all the reactions of sinful life. Therefore, as a perfect yogi, you can understand everything external and internal regarding embodied conditioned souls like us." Which means, if we follow austerity and cultivate transcendental knowledge, and do chanting and attain samadhi, then our mind will come under control. Our mind can be controlled by all these things. Austerity means, you know, denying, you know, materialistic pleasures for the mind voluntarily. Because by feeding the mind whatever it is going on, demanding more and more, we lose austerity and we become intoxicated. And similarly, knowledge, transcendental knowledge should be cultivated so that we can know the difference between Sat and Asat, between Atma and Paramatma. And transcendental samadhi is attained by Vivasaya Atmika Buddhir Ekeh Kurunandana. In this way, the mind becomes calm, cool, collected and free from sinful reactions, you see. Therefore, then such a person can understand everything, he says, external, internal, regarding embodied souls. The intention of the conditioned souls is easily observable by a self-realized person. Like Srila Prabhupada is watching in America people and he is able to understand the intent of the conditioned souls very easily. Yeah. So now 23 to 26. So two more verses translation you read, Prabhu.
"O great soul, you are aware of everything, yet you are asking me why I am full of anxiety. Therefore, in response to your order, let me disclose the cause. As a person aggrieved by hunger and thirst is not pleased by external gratification of flower garlands or sandalwood pulp, I am not pleased with my empire, opulence or possessions, which are desirable even for great demigods, because I have no son."
Yeah. One more.
"Therefore, O great sage, please save me and my forefathers who are descending to the darkness of hell because I have no progeny. Kindly do something so that I may have a son to deliver us from hellish conditions."
Yeah, Prabhupada says in that, like King Chitraketu responsibly desired to beget a child so that he and his forefathers might be delivered from the darkest regions. He was concerned with how to get Pinda in the next life, not only for himself but also for his forefathers. Therefore, he requested Angiramuni to favor him with a son, like this he says. Okay. So, in the previous verse, example is given, you know, a hungry man and a thirsty man is not satisfied with flower garlands and sandalwood pulp. Gauranga Prabhu was telling, he had gone to some particular ISKCON temple the day before Pandavanirjala Ekadashi day. So he had given some lectures the previous night and slept. And the next day was Pandavanijala Ekadashi day. So he stayed in the temple. So all day there were kirtans and chanting and everything. And he gave morning evening classes. And their mouth had become extremely dry. So next day morning, 6 o'clock, the time for drinking the juice came. So Prabhuji, already 5:30 only he went. He was sitting in the kitchen, near the kitchen. He said, please kindly get me the water. So 6 o'clock when it started, one devotee came with a garland. Gauranga said, okay, keep the garland aside. First you give me water, he said. Then he went and brought one chandan. Then he was putting chandan here. Prabhuji, okay, please come. Prabhuji, please bring it. No, Prabhuji, you know, we follow all the etiquettes. You are a senior devotee. He said, senior devotee, but first give me something to drink. So Gauranga was expressing about how much desperate he was for the water on the Dwadashi day, next to Nirjala Ekadashi. So at that time, what is one thing you need the most? Some water to put in the mouth. Correct, no? Similarly, Chittaketu is telling, you know, my ministers are respectful and everything. You may give a garland, you may give ornaments, you may... actually, for a hungry man, if you give all these things, you know, he is not happy. You have to give the right thing for him. You have to give the food or you have to give water to whatever one needs. Similarly, all I need is I need a son. Then my misery will be gone. I am actually hankering to have a son. So we can talk about this from two angles. One angle I have put there, if you see the theme. Read it, read the theme.
The inquenchable thirst for material pleasure.
Yeah. See, every living entity in this world becomes adamant in getting some object. It can be like a child can be adamant for a toy. A young boy can be adamant for getting a young girl, getting married to her. Therefore, you find sometimes if a boy is aiming at some particular girl and she... like one boy girl in the college days, third year or fourth year, they became attracted to each other. And when they passed out, and the girl's father said, see, your boy, you know, he's in a very simple job. He has to get promotion. If he doesn't earn well, I cannot give you in marriage to him. The girl was a simple girl. She told him, see, within next 6 months, either you get a better and bigger job which pays you. Now you are only getting 25,000. My father says you should be getting at least 45 to 50. If you get, I will marry you. Otherwise, my father will give me in marriage to somebody else. I am actually ready for anything. Because we women, actually, we need shelter of somebody. If my father cannot give to you, he'll give to somebody. So this boy's life was so miserable. Because he was, with his current qualification, he is not able to get a bigger job. And he can do MBA. And he's telling the world, you wait, I finish my MBA and then I will get a better job. Why 45? I will get 75. But the girl's father said, no, you are already, you know, your age is going, we have to get you settled. So can you understand the mindset of that boy? He is feeling similar misery like Chitraketu. Correct? Actually, he is very desperate. And although both come from good family, you know, he cannot run away with this girl also. Yeah, they cannot go for registered marriage. They can't do such kinds of things. So he's feeling a great pain in the mind. So then he went to one devotee and said, Prabhuji, why is Krishna doing this to me in my life? And the devotee gave him a brilliant answer. He said, this girl is not meant for you. He said, therefore Krishna is actually saving you from some great trouble. So if she is meant for somebody, like we say, you know, marriages are arranged in heaven, we say, no? So, you cannot change your destiny. If somebody is meant for you, that girl only you will get in your life. Similarly, she is supposed to get some other husband, somebody else has a husband, and she gets that person. These are all very rigidly fixed and very difficult to change. Don't try to change your destiny by your lamentation. Your lamentation is not going to change the destiny. It will be unnecessary, useless cry, uselessly. Or you may want to commit suicide foolishly, or you may say that I will not marry anybody in my life. Actually, many people say this. Later on, they marry after that. You know, so many things people say like that. So, in this world, you will see nowadays many, many boys and girls connect like this. Unfortunately, these poor children, they don't know how powerful is destiny. They don't know. They are going to cry. Now they are enjoying taking selfie and everything. Later on they are going to cry. Because this is not in their hands. The providence is not in our hands. It is actually, you know, how precisely the karmana deva netrena jantur dehopapatti estriya pravishta udaram pumso reta kanashraya. Bhagavatam says the super soul is in everyone's heart, and who is supposed to be matched with whom, and how are they going to settle in life, and how many children they will have, and what type of, everything is rigidly fixed. One cannot, therefore one should not try to work against destiny. It would be very foolish. It's like trying to swim against the waves of the ocean. And one will be repeatedly slapped and battered sometimes. So how many of you have met people who are desiring something that is impossible? You met people? Yeah, correct. Like imagine somebody is like in Bombay, you will find many, many young boys come with the desire to become cinema actors. You see that? Some of them want to become singers. You know, they want to become singers. Many ladies, girls also come to Bombay to join. Their goal is to become a Bollywood actress or a Bollywood actor. They try to do all possible. First they try to become a model. They meet this person, that person. They work hard. Sometimes even after 10 years, they are getting older. They are not able to get in. On the other hand, somebody without much endeavor, very easily they are absorbed. Similarly, you will find in everybody's destiny how much fame you have, or how much money you will have, how much sukham, happiness you will. These are all very rigidly fixed. You can't change much. Any of you observed somebody does very little and they become very famous? You have seen that? You know? And you wonder, right? I am doing so much. Correct, no? People compare always. How this fellow is famous with little work, I am doing so much work. It's not a question of your work or my work. These are all fixed. So trying to work against the destiny will make our life very frustrating. Therefore I have written there is an unquenchable thirst for material pleasure in this world. So we all should know in our life, see, we should hope for the best and be prepared for the worst. It is said. Okay, you have this desire. If that desire is fulfilled, it is good. Okay, if it doesn't fulfill, then what next is available? And what is next available? What is available? Oh, if none of these things click, what is the worst thing possible can happen? One who has thought out deeply, best. Now, for example, if you are in Chitraketu's position, you know, what is the worst thing that can happen to you? If you are in Chitraketu's position, try to think. Who died? The worst thing that can happen is he will not have any son. And the best thing that can happen is he will have a wonderful son, you know, and then he will become the next king and he will also deliver the forefathers. And the worst thing that can happen is he may not have any son at all. Correct, no? So Chitrakis should be ready for both. If I have the son, it is wonderful. If I don't have any son, you can ask the sage, my dear sage, if I don't have any son at all in this lifetime, then who will deliver my forefathers? Then sage would have told him, take to devotional service. If you take to devotional service, karmani nirdahati kintaja bhakti bhajam govindam adipurushum tamamajam. He will say that if you become a bhakta, Prabhupada is going to come to that point. It's coming very soon. See, there is one point which he says here. See here. Subtle loss of forefathers suffering in hell without descendants to deliver them exist only for not for devotees. This is the point. This point he would have, who would have told him? Yes. If Chitraketu was prepared for the worst, he should have asked the sage, in case in my bhagya I don't have a son to deliver me and my forefathers, what is to be done? Then he will say, see, generally the Yamadutas catch and take a person to Yamaloka, there will be punishments and everything for your sinful actions, everything. But Ajamila was delivered from Yamadutas. By whom? By Vishnudutas when he uttered the holy name. So Angira would have told him, just chant the holy name, take a Vaishnava guru, take shelter, all your karma will be burnt to ashes. He would have told him. But Chitraketu was not ready to hear the other side. He was like bent upon, no, no, I want. He was like that. Very adamant. You see? So, and to the degree we are adamant, to that degree we will suffer unquenchable thirst for material pleasure. It has made many, many people mad also in this world. Anybody remembers an example in Shastra like Pururava was chasing after Urvashi madly? Like that, there are examples not only of man woman, it can be like Anga wanted a son very desperately. He was a good soul. Yeah, Bharat Maharaj was attached to the deer. Vishwamitra wanted to go higher and higher. He was also, actually, Vishwamitra suffered varieties of things until he became a devotee. Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana are examples also. All having unquenchable thirst for material pleasure. And that too, we adamantly want somebody to provide what we want. Like somebody says, Prabhu, everybody understands me and respects me. Only that fellow is not respecting. Somehow, Prabhuji, I want to make sure he will respect me. Why that person? You mind your own business. How many of you have felt like that any time? Acha, only 2-3 of you. I thought many will be there. Why that person doesn't understand my glory? Like that conditions all things like that. And he tries to mold that person. Aur dikam ga tumko tamasha. See, I can't do this, I can't do that. What do you say now? Correct, no? So the living entity tries to get something which is very difficult to get, very hard to obtain. Shilpa Prabhupada ki, Bhakta Vrinda ki, Jai.